Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Now, one of the casualties of Saturday night's blackout in New York City was Jennifer Lopez. She had a big concert planned there at Madison Square Garden. She had barely taken the stage when she was ordered off, and everyone was told to evacuate the building. She says she was waiting there, and obviously we had to be evacuated. She's very, very sorry that the show had been canceled, but she told the fans not to worry about it, that she's going to give them their money's worth, and they will reschedule that show. Well, she didn't waste any time on that front. She announced later that night that the show had been rescheduled for tonight. So if you've got tickets to that show, obviously you were disappointed, but J-Lo will perform tonight at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
So that's very, very cool. But that whole thing happened, I think, what is it, the 42nd anniversary of the big blackout in 1977. It happened right there on the date.
Isn't that funny?
That's really amazing. It really, really is. And I'll tell you, man, that's a panic situation, mm-hmm. especially when you're in a place like Madison Square Garden. When you think about the world that we are living in, you know, first, right off the bat, you're thinking terrorism. Right off the bat, you're thinking, is there some nut who cut the power and now
right.
he's going to come in here with a shotgun and start shooting? Luckily, it was just human error. They're not really sure what caused the blackout, but Con Edison is working on it. Today, and they should have an answer very, very soon.
So I thought this was planned, Tony. So I have a friend who came up from Florida, and she had posted, she has two young daughters, and she said, you know, we really lived it up in New York. We did X, Y, and Z, ABC, 1, 2, 3, and we also experienced the great blackout. So I thought when I read that, and then you hear, oh, it happened on the exact same date 42 years later, I thought, wow, what a spectacle. They had a planned blackout. I don't know if it was like an anniversary thing. So I'm thinking, but then I start to read this and you're hearing about Broadway shows being cut short. J-Lo's show got cut short. And there are performers in the streets trying to remedy what happened and make people feel better. And you're watching the videos of people trying to storm out of Broadway theaters and J-Lo's concert. And this was complete mayhem. And I think, well, this couldn't have been planned because even the artists are like, what in the heck is going on?
Well, make no mistake, the city lost billions during that blackout. And, you know, if that was going to be a planned thing, it would have been for a second and then the lights would have came
on,
you know. But the city lost a lot of money over the weekend because of that blackout. Don't get me wrong, they're going to make it up, but nonetheless, that was devastating to the city. It was crippling there for a few hours anyway.
Yeah, and unfortunately New York already has had scary things happen, obviously 9/11 and everything. So when you have something like that happen, you certainly, your mind kind of goes into, I would think, a scared panic shutdown sort of. So God bless everybody who stayed very calm, and it seemed like they handled a lot of the evacuations very well, so that was good.
I live half my life in a panic state, so it was nothing new for me.
Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
Hey, the Coffee Break Chat. Today, we feature Lieutenant Jim Perez. He's from the Fairfield Police Department. Crime on the mind. Lieutenant Jim Perez, how are you this morning, my friend? Are you there, Lieutenant Jim?
Jimmy, where are you?
Jimmy, where are you, man? Why can't he hear us? All right. We're going to put Jim on hold just for a second and do this and see if we can correct the problem. I don't know. Maybe he went to the Bacow. All right, you try it. See if he can hear you.
Hey, Jim.
Good morning.
Yeah, you can hear me, but can you hear Tony?
Hello, testing 1, 2. All right.
Yeah.
You know, Tony, just so you know, I heard you the whole time and I was talking, and I know it could be a little frustrating, but I was like, hello, I'm here.
All right, Jim. Pay attention, Jim. Pay attention. All right. Anyway, Jim Perez is here, Crime on the Mind, Fairfield Police Department. Jim, you know, a lot of us were taken aback over the blackout in New York City over the weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know if it was me. If I was in one of those theaters or whatever and suddenly there was a blackout, I got to tell you, I think I would have panicked. And my mind would have went right to terrorism. That would have been the first thing I would have thought of.
Everyone thinks of that in this day and age, and with good reason, you know, with all the incidents that have happened. I mean, we know that terrorists and criminals alike are looking to disrupt our way of life. And one way that they do that is by obviously looking for ways and loopholes in which they can manipulate or control electricity and the flow of it. And I got to tell you, it is pretty scary. When I first saw it, I thought initially the same thing. Something not good is happening. But, you know, there are things that people can do to prepare to not panic as much, because the bottom line is you never know when something bad is going to happen. And I think the only way to really kind of reduce it or even avoid injury is by understanding your security awareness, you know, like to understanding your surroundings and having a security foundation. One thing I tell people all the time, and I tell this when I teach classes, I tell them all the time, listen, when you walk into a strange building that you're not familiar with, one of the first things that you should do is go up and look at the floor plans, which are required by every local ordinance. You know, floor plans of a building can tell you where the exits are. They can tell you where the restrooms are. They can tell you where the manager's office are. You know, these are all the important things that I think one of the most important things that you can do, because the reality is when you're in a strange place, like in a theater or anywhere else, you really don't know what to do. And there really is no one who's going to do a mass coordination of people's efforts. But I would keep the family together. I would try to go into some room or some place that you can actually be safe. But more importantly, one of the things I do, Tony and Melissa, and I tell you, I do this all the time, and I really do, is I carry a small little flashlight. Flashlights today, the technology is so good, but a small flashlight in the dark can actually help you immensely. You know, the one that I have is I mean, the thing has like 275 lumens. It's extremely powerful. It actually can flash in case of emergency. But these are the things that knowing your security awareness, knowing what's around you, and then going to a safe place during an outage or something bad can actually help save your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, do you remember, I believe it was in Denver, somebody had gone berserk with a gun in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I remember a couple of days later, I'll never forget it, we were watching the movie Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis. My wife and I went with our son, and my wife was a little hesitant. I don't know if we should do this. Let's let it rest a little bit. I was like, come on, come on, let's go. We're sitting in the middle of the theater, and the film, I don't know if it broke or what the story was, but the projector went down, and we were all sitting there in the dark for like a minute. And my wife is like, Tone, you know? And then I found myself saying to myself, oh, my God, what's going on here? And seconds later, the film came on. But in that moment, you don't know what to do.
Goosebumps.
Yeah. And you know what? In a movie theater especially, you have to be strategic in where you're sitting.
Sure.
You have to be aware of all of your exits. And you have to play over in your mind. Listen, it's called mental conditioning. You play in your mind over and over. Police officers, military, we get training that keeps us sharp and keeps us be able to react, you know, quickly. And I think that for everyone else, you don't have to go through that, but you can do mental conditioning. When you're in the mall and you're walking around and you're waiting for your significant other and they're in the store and you're outside, I give this example all the time. Say to yourself, what would I do if that plate glass just across the way just blew out? How would I react? Because when you take information and you mix it with emotions, it goes deep into your subconscious. And really, when something bad happens, this is what happens. Most people freeze because they don't understand how your mind operates. Your mind does not want to be exposed to any type of violence. So your conscious thought, those things that control logic, speech, all those kind of things, all that goes away the minute that you witness something horrible or you see something unusual. And then your subconscious, or what I like to call the hard drive of your subconscious, literally takes over, and it plays out like a movie. It tells you everything that you need to do step by step. You're no longer controlling yourself in a way.
But Jim, I was going to say, I guess the only thing with mental conditioning, I think it's a great idea what you're saying, but I also think on the opposite end, when we hear about don't let, you know, terrorism, don't let active shooting, don't let things like this control your life. Don't let it run your life. Don't be scared of these people, you know. So how do you balance the two? Because if you're sort of preparing myself, okay, I'm going to the grocery store, and what if somebody comes up behind me? I mean, will I ever be able to go grocery shopping without being fearful? I think it's kind of hard to balance the two, I guess.
The thing. It's really not, though, and I'm going to tell you why. It actually has the opposite effect. I know that you might think that, but here's the reality. When you start to actually train and you start to actually be aware of your surroundings and all the dangers around you, after a while, it seems like a lot of work, but it does become second nature. It really does. It becomes like almost instant. And you'll start to see yourself locking those doors. You'll start to see yourself, you know, drawing the shades at night, opening them up during the day, you know, making sure that your property is neat and, you know, and doesn't look attractive to burglars. There are a lot of things that you can do, but it becomes a way of life. It really does. It seems like a burden at first, but it's really not. It's a way of life. You talk to anyone who lives in the city or grew up in the city, or you talk to anybody who lives in an urban environment, they have no options but to do that. And they do. They become street smart. And that's what I'm asking, is just for people to become street smart by simply understanding the dangers around you. We are always going to be surrounded by external and internal threats everywhere we go. And I think that the more that we actually put stock into understanding that threat, the easier it becomes for us, because it's second nature.
For the Coffee Break Chat, Lieutenant Jim Perez is here from Fairfield Police Department.
And Jim, so we've been talking a lot about what happened in New York City, the blackout situation, making sure we're mentally prepared if we're ever in a situation, mm-hmm. whether it is or is not a threat. Here's something else that I think probably ties in very well with being mentally prepared: Uber rides. We had a situation over the weekend, as you know, where a Fairfield mm-hmm. woman apparently was in a situation, her driver came on to her, and again, all allegedly, that this person did this, but in the meantime, it's not unheard of. We've heard of either Uber drivers or Uber passengers being in situations where they are now in a lot of trouble. How can you mentally prepare yourself to, I guess, be responsible or know how to handle Uber? I don't know. How do you word that?
Yeah, Uber and Lyft is something that's just, it's technology. It's here. It's just something that's being offered through the internet. But I will tell you this. There is a difference in my eyes between a legitimate taxi service and an Uber and Lyft driver. Taxi services, they require FBI fingerprint checks. They do a deeper background check. Uber and Lyft, not so much. It looks like they do a very basic check, and they really don't go deep. And I'm going to tell you why. This driver that we ended up arresting has an extensive history, okay, in robbery, burglary, and things like that. So clearly that did not come up in the background check of whatever check Lyft or Uber, says that they do. But, people need to take common sense approach. They really do, and they need to be careful. You can't be too trusting when it comes to an Uber driver or a Lyft driver, because you're really, in essence, you're dealing with a stranger. And you don't know any Listen, taxi companies, limousine services, they it's a business, okay? And they're there to make money, and they want to make sure they protect that business. And they do that by making sure they have the proper employees. And if an employee goes rogue, they get rid of them. In a Lyft and Uber, nobody's seeing you in person. They have no idea. Everything's being done over the internet. So here's some of the things that you can do. Wait for your ride inside. Do not stand outside looking like you're a vulnerable victim and you're waiting for a ride, because someone can just pull up and act like they're your driver. Okay? And I know that there's information that you can... Yeah. The other thing is confirm details when the car arrives. Like, look around, get involved. But one important thing that I think could help tremendously for possible victims is, don't approach the driver by yourself. Always have someone else, even if it's the host calling for you, have someone else come outside and talk with the driver and with you. I think by injecting that second person, you actually, whatever criminal intent this individual has, I think it kind of reduces or goes away just by the introduction of another person, because now you have a witness, someone who sees you. You understand? It's almost like, like psychological in nature. But these are things that you can do to actually keep yourself set. Map out your own ride during the ride. Map it out so that if the guy takes a wrong turn, you know that, something's not right. But more importantly, unfortunately, this victim rode in the front seat. And so if you're getting into an Uber, always drive in the back seat and go behind the driver. I think we talked about this once before. You have to go behind the driver and don't give out personal information. Don't talk about, who you are, what you are, your status, whether you're, married or not or whatever. Just don't give out any information. Don't talk to the individual. Their job is to get you from point A to point B, not to have a social hour. So you shouldn't be doing any of that. Let a friend know where you're going. Keep people up to date in real time, as you're traveling. Yeah. Just kind of write, okay, we're now here, or even talk on the phone. So these are things that can actually help you in reducing yourself becoming a victim. Don't become... like prey, when the wolf mentality comes in. You have to be confident, and you have to appear to know what you're doing even when you don't know. And I think that goes a long way in psychological warfare against the driver, so to speak.
It's absolutely.
Strong.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's, and I think we do live in a world where half of us are very trusting and then we end up in a bad situation, or half of us overthink things and then we kind of miss out on life. So it's a good balance there. And like you said, exactly. Having, mind, what is it called? When you're prepping your mind. You're just making sure that you're ready for all those situations. Lieutenant Jim Perez, we always learn so much from you every Monday morning for Crime on the Mind. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Have a great week, guys.
You too.
Great week. Yep. Bye.
Did you know that we have been eating chocolate all wrong all of our lives? That's according to experts. And we've got some ways that you can make it taste even better.
What?
All right?
Is that even possible? Is it healthier?
No, there's nothing healthy about it.
Oh, so then how can it be wrong? How do you eat chocolate wrong?
For example, stop chewing it so much. You'll taste it more if you press it onto the roof of your mouth and let it dissolve by sucking on it. I've done that many, many times. I've done that many. That especially is the way I'll eat M&M's.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm big on that.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
They also say stop eating it in huge chunks. Break it up into smaller pieces and let it release the aromas so you taste it more, especially if it's good chocolate. Is there any such thing as bad chocolate?
Yeah.
Rubbing it with your thumb also helps, but it kind of gets messy. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I would think you're kind of getting rid of the aromas and stuff if you rub it with your thumb.
Well, they're telling you smell it before you eat it. Just like wine, experts say you should smell your chocolate before you pop it into your mouth. If it primes your taste buds and you get more of the flavor. Okay. And stop washing it down so fast. The taste of chocolate lasts a fairly long time if you let it linger. So you keep getting the flavor without eating more, which also saves calories. So there you go. We've been eating chocolate all wrong all of these years. Now, the other day, what was it? A Friday? Yeah, a Friday. You came in and you were eating an Oreo and you asked me if I wanted an Oreo.
Yes.
And I said, no, that's okay. No, thanks. I'm trying to cut back on foods of that sort. But then I noticed as you were walking away, it wasn't just one Oreo. You had a whole package of Oreos.
Yes.
Did you not?
Well, so I had it. Yeah, I was holding the whole package. It's my son's. We have Oreos in the car. That's Chase's cookie of choice. And I had forgotten my lunch that morning. And I only had maybe six cookies left in there. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to rummage through and hold six cookies and walk in with six cookies. So I just brought the whole box in.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'd polished off the box, no question.
Yes.
But there was only like six or seven cookies in there. Don't kid yourself.
Well, Oreos are a reason why I'm under a doctor's care today. Big, big fan of the Oreo. Big, big fan of chocolate. My wife is a big fan of chocolate. You know, and you know what she bought recently? And I was shocked. Not shocked. I was like, oh, my God, where did this come from? She bought Tootsie Pops.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, really?
Like a bag of them?
Yeah, like a bag of Tootsie
Pops. That's funny.
And I was like, really? She was like, yeah, I just had the urge for a Tootsie Pop.
Right, sure.
And now every night while we're watching TV, there she is with her Tootsie Pop. Yeah, that's her snack of choice these days.
I think that's funny. I also discovered, though, Tony, why people don't eat chocolate correctly. There's actually a very good reason. Is because most times you either have a spouse or a parent or somebody who's holding you accountable. Mm-hmm. So my sister, for example, she's a chocoholic. Sweet Amy Jo, she's an angel, and she does basically everything right except for her diet. She just loves to have chocolate. She will skip meals and just eat chocolate. She's very tiny, but she just loves chocolate. And she has always smuggled chocolate in her room. And to make sure my mom never caught her, she would guzzle the whole thing down. She would just make sure she eats it all in one bite, or she would just rush and eat it. And a couple of the things you said on that list are all things that she did not have time for. She would have gotten caught by Mama Shaq.
Right.
And that's just a disaster. I know I'm in that boat because my husband and I are always holding each other accountable for eating out or things like that. And I know we had s'mores over the weekend for Chase's birthday party, his teddy bear's picnic. And I know that I did not take a Hershey bar out and scoff it down in 2 seconds to make sure my husband didn't see me eating it. I know I didn't do that, but if I were to have done it, I would have, broken all the chocolate rules to eat it properly, and I would have eaten it quickly and in one bite, and, if I had done that.
I met Amy Jo one time, I guess it was.
Yes.
She's about 104 pounds soaking wet, and you tell me she eats chocolate like that, so she's officially on my list. I hate her.
Yeah, she hoards Nutella under her bed. She eats it by the spoonful. It's not okay.
There you go. Yeah.
It's time to take a look back. It's Today in History with Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
All right, not much going on this date, but 79 years ago today in 1940, the tallest man in history, Robert Wadlow, he died at the age of 32. At his death, he stood 8 feet 11 inches tall, and he weighed nearly 500 pounds. When he was in kindergarten, Robert was 5 foot 6. By the time he was 18, he was 8 foot 4 and wore size 37 shoes. Good God, man. Good God, he's a giant.
Yeah, that's intense. I got nervous just hearing that. I was like, oh my gosh, please stop.
God bless him. God bless him. 31 years ago today, 1988, the first Die Hard movie was released. This is what made Bruce Willis a superstar, and he hasn't looked back since. Even to this very day, when Die Hard is on, no matter where you are in the film and you turn it on, I've got to sit there and I've got to watch. It had action. It was funny. He was great, and he just continues to roll today. I've loved every single movie that he's ever been in. He's
great.
Love
him. You can't really beat Bruce Willis. I still love The Kid. That's one of my favorite Bruce Willis. I love that.
Good movie. Good movie. 33 years ago today, 1986, Columbia Records foolishly cut ties with Johnny Cash. Now, Johnny Cash, an American institution. He was an American institution back then, but apparently his records weren't selling. But Columbia Records, they were crying in their beer because he went on. He signed with Mercury Records and had some of his biggest hit records in the last years of his life. And this is the way I always remember Johnny Cash.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling all down the San Antone.
They don't make them like that anymore. And I'm sorry, country music has never, ever, 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 ever been the same.
Amen.
When I hear country music now, when you watch those CMA awards and everything, like, they're just rock bands. It's rock and roll music is basically what it is.
Yeah.
With a steel guitar thrown in there once in a while.
Sure. I mean, there are some country artists, but I think that they've gone a totally different direction than Johnny Cash. I think they really are very country with my back, my truck and all that stuff. And I do appreciate that kind of country, but Johnny Cash is just a legend. He just reminds me of my father-in-law. He just was a huge Johnny Cash fan, and we always play Johnny Cash to think of him, and you can't really touch a legend like that.
No, you can't.
And now, Random Knowledge with Tony and Melissa on WICC 600.
All right, a couple of things that you might not have known about. You talk about irony. Abraham Lincoln's son, Robert, wasn't at the theater when his dad was assassinated in 1865, but he was there when two other presidents were killed. He was with James Garfield at a train station in Washington, D.C. when he was assassinated in 1881, and then he was in the same building in New York when William McKinley was assassinated in 1901. And then after that, he always got many invitations to hang out with presidents, but he said, always declined the invitation after that, saying, I don't think it's a good idea that I hang around with any sitting presidents.
Clearly, he's bad luck.
And if that wasn't enough for irony, when he was a younger man, before his father was assassinated, he was waiting for a train, and somehow he ended up being thrown in front of the tracks. The crowd or something got to be too much, and he ended up on the tracks as the train was coming. A hand reached out of nowhere and pulled him to safety. The ironic part about it is the man who saved him was John Wilkes Booth's brother.
What?
Yeah, that's a true story.
That's wild.
It's wild,
but
it's true.
The whole thing is wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the fact that he wasn't there when his dad passed away, I think the only reason for that is because God was like, listen, you shouldn't have to see that. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to see that. Right. Well, Pennsylvania is misspelled on the Liberty Bell. Really? Yikes. Okay. It only has one of the first two N's. It wasn't wrong at the time the bell was made because a few different spellings were used, but it's been wrong since they settled on one official spelling. Well, you can't fix history. That's been sitting there for long, long time. So you can't change it now.
True. Leave it alone. That's the way we want to see it. And the population of Washington, D.C. jumps 79% every day when people commute in. Boston has the second biggest daily jump at 40%. Houston is third at 28%. So imagine that. The population jumps 79% every day in Washington, D.C., with people commuting in and out every single day.
Well, think about even just like the buses of people that come in for middle schools, high schools, elementary school. They have those trips. I can only imagine how many people come in there. Oh, my gosh. And then politicians usually don't live in Washington. They live outside those areas, so it's not so expensive. So I believe it. That's crazy.
Unbelievable.